Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Hi, this is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast, and today we're going to be talking about the development of an entrepreneur and a life care planning business, as well as a publishing business. I have with me today Victoria Powell, who is the founder and president of VP Medical Consulting, which offers medical case management services, life care plans, and a variety of other services. I think I've known Victoria for at least 12 years, maybe, and she has done a couple of programs for me in the past, which were very well received. We're going to be talking today about how Victoria developed her business and some of the aspects that she has encountered in running and growing a business. Welcome to the show, Victoria.
Great, Pat. Thank you so much for having me. I love working with you on projects such as this, and I'm looking forward to it.
Tell our listeners, how did you get started in life care planning?
It's funny that you should ask, because I did not even know that life care planning existed when I began to do the research for it. I was a legal nurse consultant, and I was really struggling to get cases. I had not worked at the bedside in many years due to a latex allergy, and I was marketing to lots of attorneys, door-to-door, dropping by packets, trying to cold call, basically anywhere I could get in front of some attorneys. And they were receptive to my coming in, but all they really wanted to do was take a copy of my CV and keep it on file. And what I realized was that they were really looking for bedside experts. And because I had not been at the bedside in so many years, I didn't feel like that was appropriate for me. And I happened to mention my struggle in getting cases to another LNC who just happened to be a former manager of mine when I worked at a case management firm. And with the case management firm, and she had begun doing life care planning. So I asked her, I said, well, what is life care planning? Like, I've never heard of that. And I can remember she basically told me that, well, it's a lot of research and it's financial stuff, but it's, you'll love it. It's so much easier than it used to be because of, we have the internet now. And I just think you'd be really good at it. So she gave me some contacts to check with. And after talking to, I did a nurse life care planning course. Since then I've been certified by both the nurse life care planners and the ICHDC, which has a life care planning course, a certification for nurses and non-nurses alike. But I took a nurse life care planning course, and what I did was I reached out to one of the instructors of the course, and it just felt like she was talking my language. And when I realized that she told, what she kind of encouraged me about was that it doesn't matter if the attorney is a plaintiff attorney or a defense attorney, that they both need life care plans and that you could work for either the plaintiff or the defense. And with having a case management background, she felt like I was really well suited to this. And I have found in my line of business that that has been very helpful for me. So basically, I took a course and sat for my first exam and started marketing myself in a completely different way.
And what kind of reception did you get?
Much better. It was a different type of attorney client. In life care planning, you're looking for attorneys who have the financial ability to take on large cases. As you know, medical malpractice and things like that take a lot of money from a plaintiff attorney up front. But the reason that it worked well for me in my line of business is because of my case management background. There were many times where an insurance adjuster would want to know what the cost of a procedure was or what the future medical cost was expected for some particular type of injury. So I was able to use that knowledge that I already had and talk intelligently about something that at the time when I'm first starting out, I didn't know that much about. So what I did was just kind of start small with some of the attorneys that I knew, and I started doing those reserve setting task assignments that I would get from the adjuster a little bit more thoroughly because of my training in life care planning. And then I used those as samples to provide to new attorney clients. So I found the plaintiff attorneys more engaging and more receptive to life care planners than I did as a bedside nurse. And that may have been twofold. I mean, I wasn't comfortable in marketing myself as a bedside expert just because I had not been at the bedside in so many years. So it may have been a combination of factors, but it definitely was a much more receptive than it was when I was, you know, cold calling and going door to door.
I know you've mentioned so far offering life care planning and cost projections, and I know from going to your website that you also offer as a company Medicare set-asides, calculations, and case management, as well as legal nurse consulting. Is it typical for life care planners to offer this full array of services?
Many life care planners just provide life care plans. I don't know if there's a typical life care planner because all of us kind of come from different walks of life, different occupational history. So I don't know that there's necessarily a typical, but again, many life care planners just perform life care plans. A good portion of life care planners also do Medicare set-asides or case management. So it's not as many life care planners do both MSAs and case management. I do find that I am a rarity in that aspect. And then with regard to legal nurse consulting, it really depends on how you define legal nurse consulting, because we have some life care planners who started out as in a traditional legal nurse consulting role and have learned about life care planning, and then they have taken on more education and then added life care planning to their services. But we have other life care planners who really just started following some LNC education, maybe attending some of the conferences, they get on their listservs and so forth to stay knowledgeable about various aspects of the medical legal system. So they may call themselves a life care planner and a legal nurse consultant, but they don't do anything as far as a legal nurse consultant except for life care planning, if that makes sense. But for me, the services are closely related to one another, and I kind of flow from one to the other pretty seamlessly.
You know, that's an interesting point. Having been on the board of directors for the Legal Nurse Consulting Association, the American Association of Legal Nurse Consultants, we envisioned life care planning as a type of legal nurse consulting. And last month when I was at the Life Care Planning Association presenting a talk on report writing, I was selling books, and the titles of the books are How to Get More LNC Clients and LNC Marketing. And a woman walked by and said, oh, these books are all about legal nurse consulting. I don't do that. And I was thinking, well,
you do.
Yeah, but I didn't want to say, you know, I didn't know how to handle it. I just kind of sort of sat there and stupidly and looked at her and thought, but, you know, the concepts of marketing and building a business and having great relationships with your clients and having a website, all of that applies whether you call what you do legal nurse consulting or life care planning. But for her, they were two separate entities.
To me, the difference is really on whether or not you focus on causality. If you do, then that's more of a traditional LNC role, where life care planners can never really talk about causality. We are only damages experts. So the principles of being an expert witness and the business and the marketing aspects, the report writing, all of that is very much the same. And I think the information that you get about the medical legal system, the education that you obtain about the medical legal system, just benefits you, whether you're in a traditional LMC role or whether you're doing what I would call traditional life care planning. The financial aspects are different in the research that we do as a life care planner, but the overall concepts are very much the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's very sad that that person said that, because if they had looked at your materials, they would have realized that those materials are very valuable to what they do.
Well, thank you. I wasn't fishing for a compliment, but I always appreciate them when you come my way.
Well, as someone who's purchased many of those items through the years, I highly recommend them. So,
and we should mention that you were one of the editors on the Nursing Malpractice book the last time we revised that. So you've got your name in my publications as well. From the standpoint of marketing, I'm curious, when you're talking to attorneys and they come to you for a life care plan, the concept of upsells or cross sells is something that I spend a lot of time studying when I learn about marketing and I apply marketing methods. And I'm wondering about the ease with which a life care planner can transition an attorney to another related service. And I bring this up also because there's a guy who I became close to who runs a demonstrative evidence store. And he said that what commonly happens to him is that people envision him only as a photographer. And then it turns out they need to have an exhibit created for the courtroom. And they say, oh, I didn't know you did that too. So he created a marketing piece one time that said, and I also do, and he listed all of his services. So how do you handle that with attorneys who start off with a life care plan and then you see something else that you can help them with?
Well, I love the concept of upselling. In life care planning, things are a little bit, if they come to me as a life care plan, it's more difficult to transition them to another service. And the reason for that is I'm in an expert role and there's a lot of ethical issues that you can get into. In other words, I can't case manage a client at the same time I'm writing a life care plan for them. Mm-hmm. Now, I could, once the life care plan is done and I go to court and the court is settled, there is a role for me as a case manager to case manage that, maybe with a trust company or something down the line. But in the opposite direction, if I have a client that comes to me as an LNC client, they're looking at a merit, a claim for merit or something like that. That's much more easy to upsell them into a cost projection or a life care plan or an MSA. Mm-hmm. I tell this story. I had a gentleman, an attorney client of mine. He's actually a defense attorney for workers' compensation, but he does some other cases on this side. And he had a friend who's a plaintiff attorney, and he was taking a case to court. And apparently this attorney hadn't done a whole lot of work on the case and the files were kind of a mess. And so he calls our mutual friend in and he says, hey, I've got to go to court on such and such date and I have this case and I have no idea what I'm doing with it. So my mutual friend calls me and he tells me that they have this plaintiff case and it's a car hits a pedestrian. And he says, can you come over here and get these records? We don't even know what we have. It's just a mess. This guy's not done anything and I just need help. So I keep asking him, well, what is it that you need from me? Because I'm trying to figure out how I'm supposed to help him. And he really can't tell me anything. So this was very early in I was not doing life care planning at the time. I was really just doing legal nurse consulting work. So I took all the records and I can remember they were all paper records, in boxes, and I'm out in the floor of the office. And so my assistant and I took this big box of printed out medical records and we were putting them into piles in the floor, just trying to figure out what had happened. And this lady had some complaints and it looked like the complaints really hadn't been addressed. So the only thing I really needed to do is kind of put these in a three ring binder, the whole tab paginate records that we used to do, And then I would put together basically a letter, and I wrote out all of the things that I thought that she probably had. I'd worked in neurology, and it looked like a pudendal nerve injury to me. And of course, I can't make a medical diagnosis, but I was spelling out some of the findings and what you would do to test to see if she actually had that. And then there's not really a whole lot in the way of cure, but at least she could be tested and find out what was going on. So I basically presented the binder to him. He loved it. They went to court. Everything was great. A few months passed, and he contacts me again, and he says, I have another file for you. I said, okay, what do you need? I don't know, just like what the thing you did for me last time, that binder. So they don't really know what they want,
mm-hmm.
and our job mm-hmm. is just to be the solution. And so I like to have attorneys are just as likely to contact me by email than they are telephone, and that's a disservice. We don't get that give and take that you get in a phone conversation or in an in-person conversation. So a lot of times they'll contact me and ask for a merit review. And I have this one attorney, they do a lot of volume of car wrecks, and he's always sending me stuff because he thinks it's such a great case. And so far, they've all been terrible cases, but he always thinks there's going to be some kind of future medical there or something along those lines. So I'm more likely to take someone who really doesn't know what they want. Maybe it's a merit review, maybe it's a chronology that they're wanting done. And once I get that piece completed, then I'll call them and I'll talk to them about some of the findings that I see. And then we'll talk about, oh, well, we could do this as a future cost projection. A lot of times it'll be a great example that happens all the time. An attorney deposes a physician. The physician says, Mrs. Smith is going to need this type of spine surgery or something in the future. They ask the doctor what that spine surgery is going to cost, and typically they will give their surgeon fee only as the cost, if they give anything at all. Sometimes they don't even know at all. But if they give something, they usually give what their surgeon's fee is. Well, as we all know, that is not the cost of the surgery. The surgery includes anesthesia and pathology and incidentals in the hospital and the facility fee and the back brace and the pre-op testing and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So once I get a chance to explain to the attorney why that's a really bad idea and why they're leaving money on the table, then I end up getting just a cost projection. And we can just cost out a single surgery, for example, so that we can show them, okay, your doctor has said that they're going to need this surgery, and that's really all they're going to need, but this is what all encompasses that surgery. And once you do one or two cases with them and they see the difference, that's what solidifies my clients going forward.
Mm-hmm. So they're seeing the results or the outcome, and they're recognizing how valuable it is to them in litigating the case.
Right. And I mean, sometimes they'll just call me and say, Victoria, I need a nurse to do blah, 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 you know, some kind of bedside nursing, or they're looking for an expert or something like that. And so they'll ask me for that, and then I'll find out more about the case, and then I get a chance to make some other recommendations. But it's usually from an LNC or a case management or even an MSA standpoint, going towards either another case or a life care planning case that opens up into an LNC case. It's not normally one case where you upsell like you could with a product or some other types of services, but certainly keeping that client happy and keeping them in your pocket for all the things that you offer.
I will stop this program for a moment to share a resource that I think will greatly help you manage your legal nurse consulting business. I wrote this book called How to Manage Your LNC Business, Top Tips for Success. I organized the book into two sections. Section 1 focuses on the business processes that allow you to profitably manage your business. You will learn how to map out your business and pinpoint essential factors. This section includes pointers for financial management as well as how to accomplish your goals. You will discover how to get more done through controlling distractions and effectively outsourcing and hiring. Section 2 includes tips on the most important relationships in your business, the one that you have with your clients. You will learn how to deepen your connections with your clients through your communications, and when conflict or the need to negotiate arises, the tips in this section will help you gain the confidence needed to tackle some of the world's best negotiators. Lastly, you'll see how an attorney views the skills of an LNC. This series is designed to give you the essential knowledge you need to grow your business. Order this book at http://lnc.tips/creating-series. That link is http://lnc.tips/creating-series. Creating series is all one word. Use the code LISTENED in the promo coupon box for a 25% discount.
And so far we've been talking about your services. Is there more to VP Medical than you? Do you have other people working with you?
Absolutely. I could not do this by myself. I have a mix of subcontractors and employees. Mm-hmm. And my employees are non-medical as well as medical staff, IT staff, things like that. In case management, I learned a long, long time ago that there are only so many hours in the day. Uh-huh. So you have to work smarter, not harder, because mm-hmm. you're not going to get any more hours. Mm-hmm. So some of the simple things that I first started delegating were sending out appointment letters, being available to answer the call, the phone. Some people love the phone. But if you're a case manager, you get really sick of the phone really fast. So while a lot of people like to multitask and they can use their drive time to make phone calls, for me, that's my getaway time. I just like to be in the car, no radio, no nothing, just silent, just to have some time to unwind. So I stopped putting my cell phone on my business cards, and I had someone to answer the phone at the office. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have to be the one that answered all of those. And it just kind of grew from there. So we have a group, and it's always fluctuating, but we have a lot of fun.
And then you mentioned some medical and some non-medical people. Have they been people you've advertised in order to be able to start working with you? And are they virtual, or do they come to a central location?
They are not virtual. They do come to a central location, although we allow our staff to work a combination of at home and in the office. How they got to me was advertisement, word of mouth. I've done everything. The person I've had with me the longest, she actually has a degree in equine something. So in other words, horses, has absolutely nothing to do with medical. My husband's an airbrush artist, and she actually worked for him. She was his receptionist and office staff, and my business was in his office. And so she heard a lot of what I was doing, and she would take calls and stuff when I would be out of the office. And so I decided, hey, it's a whole lot easier to get somebody to answer the phone for the airbrush business than it was for my business. So I took her with me. And so he hired somebody new. And 2 years later, I took her with me too. Hmm. So we kind of pre-trained and I stole from mm-hmm. him. But other staff has come by. I mean, we've done everything. I've used job listing boards. I've used association message boards where you can look for help. I have contacted people through conferences. I have, oh my goodness, just all different kinds of ways. One of the nurses that has been working for me was a neighbor of a neighbor. So we've kind of just tried all different ways. We've used job boards and headhunters and all kinds of things. Some have worked well, some have not worked so well.
Mm-hmm. You know, as you were talking, I was thinking about somebody that I spoke with a few years ago who was crazy busy in her business. And she was very concerned about bringing in a subcontractor or an employee or a partner because she felt that she wouldn't be able to maintain the same quality of work product that she knew that she could produce. And as I talked with her further, it really became clear that her growth as a business had a cap on it because of the way that she looked at that. How do you recommend people get beyond that mindset, as obviously you did in your business, I did in my business? What is the secret to learning how to delegate and share the workload?
That is a really, really great question because I am a complete and total control freak. I like to control everything. That is absolutely my personality, and it's one of the reasons that I had such difficulty in allowing others to do for me for many years. I still am working on letting go of more and more. The way it started was I started allowing others to handle the billing and the reception work. Just like as I said, I like to be by myself and be quiet. And so I would have reception actually answer the phone. Then I decided that I didn't want to be the one collecting the overdue invoices because I want to be the good guy. I want to be the one who does the great work and let somebody else hound them for money. So I offset all of the billing and bill paying and things because that was taking an enormous amount of time, and anybody can do that. I was the nurse. I was the one who needed to do the nursing type work. So that freed up a lot of time for me to focus on things that I was best at doing. Mm-hmm. Now that those couple of things are so ingrained into our office, now that I barely know how to check our balance on our bank account or to create a report from our software, just because I have offloaded those off of me for so long. But one of the things that really turned the corner for me is a book by Dave Ramsey, you know, the financial guy.
Mm-hmm.
He has a book called Entre Leadership. And in this book, he talks about what makes the best leaders and what makes the best entrepreneurs. And he talks about this dominant personality and the people who have all the ideas, and that's very much me. And I always have a huge running list of all the to-do things that I'd like to get done eventually, but again, there's only so much time in the day. And I was having a lot of trouble in bringing staff in during the time. And after reading his book, he really hones in on doing, I think his is like a 12-step hiring process where you start out by doing like a drive-by interview, then you end up having them do the real interview, and then you have them interview with like middle management and so forth, and all the way through to the very end when they get ready to offer the job, you actually have a dinner with him and his wife and really kind of get to know each other on a personal basis. And a big key concept that he does is personality tests. And he does these personality inventories called the DISC or the DISC. And these are things that you can find free on the internet and so forth. He sells a packet of these. But what we did is we had all the staff take the DISC inventory. And we really learned where our personalities were. And what I found was I had been trying to hire people who were like me. Because I thought if you were driven like I'm driven, then you would be able to help me move the company forward. What I realized was if everybody is like me, the things that I'm not good at are going to fall through the cracks. And we're not ever going to get those things well-rounded because not everybody can be the same. So I started looking for the four personality types and really building my team in people who do all different types of what they do. So for example, one of the girls that I have that works with me, she's a C or a compliance person. So she's my proofreader. She's the one who dots all my I's and crosses all my T's and makes sure everything's just right. Because I can read something two or three, four times and it looks exactly the same to me. And she will pick up all these things that I didn't pick up on before. So that was a way that we improved our report writing is just by having someone who is good at something that I wasn't good at. So that actually was a huge, huge thing for us. And we still use that today. We still use the inventories. It's also taught me as a manager to how to talk to the individuals. So you never want someone, again, I'm a big personality. I can't help it. It's just how I come off. And I have people tell me all the time, you're way nicer than I thought you were going to be when I first met you. So, and I never know how to take that. I mean, okay, I must come off kind of rough. But what would happen is, you know, I would say something. I didn't mean it at all. I would just say, hey, next time when you do such and such, would you fix this or fix that? And I would have people in tears. And I was like, why are they crying? This had nothing to do. I didn't see it as an attack on them. I just wanted their work changed. And what I realized is that some people are just like that. They feel like they are their work. And anything that you say about their work is an attack on them. So it taught me a way to actually talk to those people with those types of personalities to make not only when you want to praise them, but also when you want to admonish them. And it's been huge, huge, huge for our business. And it's helped me to know who is right for me to delegate to for this particular type of task needs to go to somebody who's a compliant person, or maybe a marketing task needs to go to somebody who's an influencer. So it's worked well for us.
Mm-hmm. And would you be the decisive personality?
Yes, very much the decision maker, very much.
Mm-hmm. I've done a couple of podcasts on the subjects of the DISC profile, and it is fascinating once you recognize the personalities that you're encountering. And I've concluded that a lot of attorneys are probably the C personality, which I've also seen as the conscientious, the compliant, the people who get caught up in the details. They want to, they're the ones who come into the deposition with a legal pad that's got 5 pages of closely written, handwritten questions, and they go through those one by one, and they take their pen
exactly.
and take it off. All right, I asked her that question. All right, now let's go on to the next one. Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Very interesting. So you've got this group of people who are working with you. Do you have staff meetings? Do you have some mechanism of maintaining that control, the control freak part of your personality that wants to make sure that everyone is moving towards an objective?
Yes, and we've tried a lot of different things through the years. I would say that I am less in control of those things now. Again, it's kind of one of those things I've kind of delegated. My assistant, Debbie, is just amazing, and she's one that kind of keeps things on track. But what we do right now is our files are on the cloud. Our files are on the cloud. We have our own cloud server. Mm-hmm. We also have billing software, which was developed for the case management industry. It's called Advocate, and it's by Consensus Medical. And what I do with it is I do all of my billing and all of my note-taking and my emails. The emails are not actually through the software, but all of my emails are cut and pasted into the software so I can kind of keep track of what's going on. We assign subcontractors through the software, so that's been a big one for us. Prior to getting this software, we tried Zoho and Asana, both as kind of ways to kind of keep track, and those just ended up being more difficult for us because it was something that you had to go to and learn to use, and it was just something that we didn't connect with as well as we should have. We create work orders. So if I send a job to a subcontractor, a work order goes out to tell them exactly what the job entails, what it's going to pay, what the deadline is, and then they have to sign that they will accept that that assignment and that they will have it done by the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have staff meetings. We had a staff meeting this morning. I'm getting ready to go out of town. We don't have a set day that we have staff meetings. It's not like we have one on the second Tuesday of every month or anything like that. It's more like, oh no, Victoria's going out of town and we're not going to be able to access her. So we need to like run through all the clients and see if we've got everything on track.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll kind of scurry mm-hmm. through and everybody makes notes and decides where, you know, what we need to do to keep things on track. I try to touch every file, at least once a month. Many of them much more frequently than that, but, we keep running, and I'm a list maker anyway. So anything that I have, if I can get it in a list in front of me and carry that with me, I'm much more likely to stay on track with it. So we use all those methods, but I would say the software, the cloud, and the staff meetings are our primary focuses.
You know, I'm laughing when you talk about it being a list maker because I am as well. And I remember sitting in a conversation with a diverse group of people. And we were all having talks about aspects of our personality. And the people who love to write lists were talking about how much fun it was to take that list and cross things off or put a check mark next to it.
Absolutely.
And there were other people.
I will break little tasks down. I will break a task down into multiple little tasks just so I can mark it off the list. Absolutely.
But there are others, Victoria, who have no concept of what we're talking about. Absolutely no concept. It's so foreign to them.
I don't know how else you keep a track. You know, and I used to, in case management, you're always juggling 20, 25, 30 people at any given time. So they used to tease me about the fact that I had all these little facts of all these different patients, things in my head, but the busier you get, you finally just get to the point, or maybe it's that, or maybe I'm getting older, I don't know, but my brain just won't hold as much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So now if I can, I call it like a download, you just kind of get it out of your brain and onto paper, then you've got room for more stuff.
That's right. Well, this has been a fast show for me. Tell us, how can listeners find out more about you?
All right. We're on the web at vp-medical.com or vpmedicalconsulting.com. That's our website. Email is my favorite form of communication, and that's victoria@vp-medical.com. Or our phone is 501-778-3378. We're located in Central Arkansas. And, of course, I'm on Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest and all those fun social media aspects. But we would love to hear from you.
Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us today. And for our listeners, thank you for tuning in to this interview with Victoria Powell, a life care planner, a legal nurse consultant, a case manager, an MSA person, and a cost projection expert. And
thank you, Pat. It's been so much fun. I really enjoyed it.
Great. And be sure to share the show with other people. Tell them about Legal Nurse Podcast. We have shows that come out twice a week. There's an interview on Mondays, and then there's a discussion by me on Wednesdays. So I'd love to have more people subscribing. Thanks so much, and tune in next week for more. And I've got a phenomenal resource for you just waiting on LegalNurseBusiness.com. My online training and books are designed to help LNCs discover ways to strengthen their skills and their businesses. Check them out at LegalNurseBusiness.com. Many of us are lifelong learners who enjoy the chance to keep expanding our knowledge, just like the Book of the Month Clubs, my membership site, lnceu.com, gives you 2 online trainings every month. We have a yearly payment plan that saves you over $50 compared to paying monthly, and each program is hugely discounted. Look at the options at lnceu.com. And my last website, the lncacademy.com, is the coaching program I offer to a select number of LNCs. You get my personal attention and mentorship so that you can excel and build a strong foundation for your LNC practice. Get all the details at lncacademy.com.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on LegalNursePodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on LegalNursePodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.